I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. It's August, and somehow summer is already coming to a close. And that means it's time for students to stock up on number two pencils, ruled notebook paper, and three-ring binders. But filling up that backpack isn't cheap, and some parents struggle with the hefty cost of school supplies. We'll talk with local district officials about what families can do if the price tag is just too high. Then, you know you can snack on fried Twinkies, fried pickles, really fried anything at the state fair. But if you have a hankering for something a little more elevated, get ready to hear what area chefs will be offering at this year's Missouri State Fair. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Believe it or not, school doors are opening throughout the metro as early as this week. For students, that means the end of summer. For parents, it can mean shelling out over a whole lot of money for school supplies, clothing, computers, and calculators. So what's all this costing? One national survey just out put the figure at nearly $700. That's that total across the country for both K-12 and college students. This year, it's supposed to reach nearly $83 billion. For all those kids. We wondered what resources are out there to help parents ease those costs. We're about to find out. Samara Crawford is with us, Crawford Herrera. She's the Community Partnerships Advocacy and Engagement Manager for Kansas City Public Schools. Samara, nice to have you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Dr. John McKinney is also here. He's Director of Student and Family Services for the Shawnee Mission School District. Dr. McKinney, so good to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Well, Samara, $700 just to get a kid supplied and clothed and ready to go to school, that's a lot of money. What percentage of your families don't have enough money around to, you know, make that payment for back-to-school supplies here?
That's a great question. And as Kansas City Public Schools is a 100% free and reduced lunch district, that's an overwhelming majority of many of our students that will struggle to be able to provide those families to provide for those students getting back to school. Rough estimates would absolutely be in the 30 to 40% range.
So what happens to those kids when they can't get their supplies?
So one of the wonderful things that we as a district are able to do is we do a huge back to school fest. And so this past Saturday, over 5,000 students and families came out, in which we provide free backpacks that are stuffed with school supplies. Additional materials may include just, you know, fun things, T-shirts, uniforms, to soften the blow, families' pockets and getting ready to go back to school. But we try and ensure that our schools have supply closets that are staffed. So as students are coming in throughout the school year, that we're able to kind of meet some of those needs as well.
So if they don't have it, the district can supply at least some of it then?
We absolutely try. And of course, then sometimes the need overwhelms the supply, but we try and overwhelmingly throughout the year to keep collecting school supplies. And we have a district that has an average of 40% mobility rate, meaning 4 out of 10 students are in and out of the doors of our school buildings over the course of the year. And so if you can get a new student in November, it means that they also need school supplies then. And so having our schools and teachers with extra supplies on hand also helps that as well.
Dr. John McKinney, again, with Shawnee Mission Schools. I'm guessing the percentage of families that struggle with these costs is a little lower on the Shawnee Mission side of the state line. How many of your families struggle with these costs?
Well, I think, again, I think that's an excellent question, and I love what the Kansas City Public School District is doing with the district-wide efforts to help kids, and not just at the beginning of the year, but throughout the year. I think that's incredible. And I would say that it is less students that are struggling with getting supplies at the start of the school year. However, having said that, there is a great deal of need in the Shawnee Mission School District as well. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it is contingent on our district to help those students provide the by providing the things they need to get ready for school, to enjoy showing up to school with everything that they need to be successful. And so we are making, as a district, a concerted effort to empower our buildings, to support them as a district, but also to encourage them to work with community partners to help those students get the supplies they need. And that's really been our emphasis over the past couple years.
You know, John, you spent a number of years at Shawnee Mission East High School, and I'm wondering over that time, and we've done shows on this, this notion that poverty numbers in Johnson County have increased over time. Did you see a rising number at Shawnee Mission East each year with the number of kids who maybe couldn't afford to buy all the school supplies they needed?
Absolutely. I share with people frequently that I think they would be surprised by the number of displaced students, homeless families, students that are struggling.
That's not the reputation, but it's the reality.
It's the reality. It's the reality across the district. And I think there's a misconception that Johnson County is doing just fine and everybody's got more than enough. But with rising, increasing housing costs and stagnant or less of an increase when it comes to salaries, families are really struggling. When two-thirds of your income goes to housing in Johnson County, there isn't much left to purchase school supplies or anything else.
And that's where the rubber would hit the road for an expense like school supplies, right? $700 or whatever it is, and that's not chump change.
That's I would say that while it's not unexpected, it's definitely not something that many families can prepare for. And that's where I believe the district needs to help. And build individual buildings can and do help. And that's really... I'm very proud of our district for empowering our building administrators to work with community partners, to assist families, to help students. We want every student who walks in our door to have the tools they need to be successful.
And if that requires the district to help out, you're saying that's happening in the Shawnee Mission School District?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The district is there to support the buildings, and the buildings are there to support their families and their kids.
You know, Samara, again, going back to the Kansas City, Missouri School District, I can't help but wonder, how often do you hear complaints from parents who just say, this is just too much money every August when I've got two or three kids in my family, they're going back to school, and suddenly I'm looking at a bill of $1,500 or $2,000, and that's just an extraordinary expense for a lot of families.
Absolutely, and I feel that as a district parent myself. I've got a sixth grader this year, and
congratulations.
Oh, I don't know. We got to get through the year. Let's talk back in May. But
I know that feeling.
Oh,
Samara.
My goodness! Yeah. And so, you know, you get the class list, and you know, back to school is a time of hope. You know, you get really excited.
Yes.
Students are really
yes.
excited, and so as a parent, you feel that tug to be able to want to provide, you know, as much of, you know, their needs and some of their wants as well. And so you get that list and you go through. And for me, you know, we're at about $125 already with just school supplies. And we haven't even started talking about sneakers and
clothes.
She wants, and clothes, and she wants this.
A new calculator.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I would consider myself one of those parents that I try and be proactive. And so while the complaints aren't, you know, as many that, you know, we count them, that we do get that feedback where it's, you know, is there any way that, you know, we can recycle some of these, or, you know, how do we think outside the box so that each year doesn't encumber its own new set of costs?
Well, and the answer is yes, you can recycle.
Absolutely.
You can bring stuff from the year
Absolutely.
Before. I've read that, and that's
yes.
perfectly acceptable.
Absolutely. And that's those are some of the things that we try and encourage parents to do as well. But you do feel that tug when you're standing in the line and, you know, and you're attempting to make sure that they are as prepared as possible for school, and you want them to be successful, and preparation is part of that success.
You know, as the both of you are sitting here talking about this, I'm having my own flashbacks to being in elementary school, and you get all those new supplies and you're getting everything organized before you walk out the door that first day, and you got that notebook that's all set up with your different classes marked off with different dividers, and that was always kind of a big feeling, you know?
It is a huge feeling. feeling. And, you know, I can remember as a student, but I can also testament as a parent, you know, they don't sleep very well the night before school starts. Everything's all laid out. It's got to be pressed and ready to go.
Right.
And so you want to embody that excitement and hope that it propels them throughout the school year. So you don't want to have a student that starts and feels like they're starting behind in some way.
Absolutely not. You know, when everybody's getting out their supplies and getting ready to do their first project or activity, you don't want a student who isn't able to do that.
Yeah.
And so we want to make sure that every student starts on equal footing, especially at such an exciting time.
Your questions about school supplies, what's required, what's not, this would be a great time to call. 816-235-2888 is our number. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. John McKinney, how often did you get complaints from parents in the Shawnee Mission School District? Do they pull you aside and say, hey, buddy, what's up with all this stuff? Or did you not get much of that?
You know, I never got any complaints from the Shawnee Mission School District.
I mean, from the parents.
From the parents of Shawnee Mission. They were always very kind and gracious.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that I have myself noticed as a parent in the district the increase in costs. And, you know, as a building principal, I would really greatly appreciate when they would come to me and say, can we help? There's really not much that we can't overcome if once we know about it. But if we don't know about it, we can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So I would encourage families, parents who are struggling with providing the supplies or with the school fees, the mandatory fees, to reach out to their building administration or the social worker or the counselor.
That can be awkward, though.
It can. It's uncomfortable.
Particularly in a district like yours, John.
Once they do, we have so many things that we can put into place. And I think that if they do ask for help, they'll find an empathetic ear who is willing to help and wants to help. And we have the resources to help.
Yeah. Now, Samara, I'm wondering, who determines which items go on the list of required supplies? I mean, does the teacher make that list? Do the administrators make it? Where does it come from?
A little bit of both. Our school leadership department at the district level, you know, takes account of the curriculum over the course of the year and those things that will be needed to be most successful in accomplishing those curriculum standards. And when working with building leaders and teachers to come up with a list that will allow for students to be able to successfully complete the year. It does change sometimes from year to year as the curriculum changes and different things are taken into account. And maybe we don't need this protractor this year.
Yes,
I'm learning all about protractors with the sixth grade. They're different. They're different types
of protractors. A new word for us adults sometimes, isn't it?
I didn't realize there were different ones. I'm sorry. And so, you know, sometimes they'll evaluate those things over the course of the year. But there are some of those very standard things that are always going to show up on the back to school.
The number two pencils and the big eraser and all that stuff.
The erasers, the scissors.
I mean, do budget constraints ever factor into this in terms of what the district tells teachers? You got to think about the bottom line here.
That's a great question. And, you know, I'd have to kind of do a little bit more digging on that. But I would say not. Just off my thoughts and remembrances as a teacher as well. But I think that oftentimes that's taken into consideration around, you know, what families can afford and what's necessary, what's most essential.
You know, John, it may not be a surprise, but clothing makes up the biggest share of this $700 total cost of going back to school for a student. You know, people who haven't had to deal with a high schooler for a while might be really shocked at what a big line item that clothing budget is. I mean, clothes and high schoolers, I mean, those two things are really important and closely tied together, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It means
peer
a lot.
Peer pressure and all that stuff, right?
Sure. Sure. It means a lot to the students to sort of fit in. That's a time where you're finding yourself, but also you want to assimilate a little bit into what everybody else is doing. And so clothes are a big part of secondary school and elementary school as well, but definitely expensive when it gets to high school.
Do you do uniforms in the Kansas City, Missouri School District?
Absolutely. I was going to piggyback on what John was saying. The majority of our schools are uniform schools as well, our elementary schools and our middle schools as well, our secondary schools. But we do have schools that do not require uniforms, and it's quite funny because my daughter attended a school, an elementary school in the district last year where they wore uniforms. It was fantastic. We didn't fight over clothes.
You like that?
I loved it. Everybody was in the same thing. You know, you get to express yourself with your sneakers and some hair bows, but that's it. But this year we're moving to a secondary school where uniforms are not required. And she's got a whole idea about what her look needs to be. I don't know how many 11-year-olds need to have a look, but that's been a topic of conversation in our home where it wasn't last year.
How would the idea of school uniforms go over in a district like Shawnee Mission? I'm guessing not really well, John.
I would agree with you. I don't know that it would go over very well. I think our district is so large, 28,000 students, and covers such a diverse area.
28,000 students.
Right.
Wow.
That I just think each community is a little bit different. Each school is a little bit different.
And that's roughly twice your size right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. We're right at about the 15,000 mark.
Let's go to some phone calls as we talk about school supplies, that time of year, clothes, and all those things that can add up to so much money for parents. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. Clinton from the Northland. Good morning. Clint, I'm having a hard time hearing you. I think we got you potted up. Can you speak up a little bit?
Is that better?
Yes, there you go. There you go.
Okay. My question was the $700 figure that they're quoting. I'm just curious. I know the majority of that figure is on clothing, but I'm curious how that equates in Kansas City dollars versus, like, New York dollars or California dollars. I have an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old, and we just did our back-to-school shopping over the weekend. And we were able to get enough for basically 10 days worth of clothing for each kid, one boy, one girl, and all of our school supplies, and came in for two kids at about $500.
Wow.
I'm just curious, what is it that, and admit it, I don't buy name brand clothing. I think it's frivolous. I'm just curious, is that the difference? The name brand versus generic clothing, or where is that difference coming from? And I'll take that answer off the air.
I'm wondering how your kids felt about not getting name brand clothing, Clinton. Was that a fight in your family, or not really?
Not really. I've raised my kids. We used to get most of our clothing at garage sales and thrift stores, and they've gotten to the point now where, in their age range, there's not as much available through those venues, but we still do discount, at the Walmart, Target, those kinds of places. They don't have a problem with it. I mean, I've made it clear from the very beginning that name brands are not important, and I stand by that.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments, Clinton. I was going to say the National Retail Federation came out with a survey and said the average amount spent on clothing was nearly $237. Do name brands matter to students in the Shawnee Mission School District, John? I think I know the answer to that question, at least for some kids.
I think that's fair to say for some kids, sure.
Yeah, it matters. How about in Kansas City, Missouri?
I would say that it does matter. And I appreciate, Clinton's feedback. I'm of the same parent where you want them to understand that what you wear is not who you are, but we're also talking about, students who are going through middle school and are growing up where, where they're wanting to fit in and they want to be able to.
Well, what year does that start? Sixth grade, fifth grade, seventh grade? What are we looking at these days?
I would say we started to feel it in my house at about fourth grade.
About
fourth grade, where she was really a little bit more aware that perhaps the jogging shorts and top that she could just throw on wasn't quite the same as everyone else's. Probably about eight or nine.
I didn't know the difference between blue and red in fourth grade. Here you're telling me that it matters a whole lot now.
I think boys have it a little easier than girls. A pair of shorts and a t-shirt versus...
That still works.
Right.
Sure.
Well, the survey says of the $700 total cost of going back to school, $237 is for clothing, $187 for electronics came in at second place. Shoes were listed as a separate category and came in at $140. So shoes for $140,
that's about accurate. And I think that, of course you take into account how frequent they're wearing it. For us, we tend to go through shoes pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But you know, for students that play sports or things like that, you've got to factor in, you know, sneakers for that, or, you know, just general everyday shoes. So if you're thinking about two or three pairs of shoes to kind of go back to school with, that's about accurate.
John McKinney, how has the influx of technology, both in the classroom and the need for it at home, changed school supply lists? What are you seeing there in terms of what's required and what's not?
Well, I think that when the district went one-to-one and provided each student with a MacBook that he or she could take home with them, use as their own during their time in middle school on, the elementary schools have iPads, but from middle school on, you have a MacBook. I think that changed considerably the amount of money that parents were required previously to spend on electronics. Whether that electronic device came with them to school or whether it was at home, now a student has one that they can use at either location. I don't want to say free of charge. I mean, there are school fees, but essentially free of charge.
How successful has that program been in your view?
Oh, I think it's had an incredible impact on our school district, on our students. We're preparing students for the environment in which they're going to be working. We still use, I have in front of me right now, paper and pencil, but many students don't. Yeah. When they go to work, I think most of them are going to see a MacBook or a laptop or a desktop or maybe just some sort of mobile device.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, the old school spiral notebook.
And Samara, how does Kansas City, Missouri handle the notion of technology? Do you provide computers for kids to go home with?
Absolutely. We also one-to-one devices for our students in secondary, middle, and high school.
Particularly important in your district because a lot of parents may not have a computer at home, right?
Particularly important. And one of the partnerships we're extremely excited about is we've partnered with Sprint to do a 1 million project in which we provide hotspots for students because we recognize that internet is also very important. You can't do the Google search, you know, for that
right,
book report
right.
if you don't have access to the internet. And so by providing those hotspots, that's another barrier removed from students being able to complete assignments in a timely and successful fashion.
Just a final point, John. Missouri has a tax-free holiday to help families deal with back-to-school supplies. Kansas, though, does not, although lawmakers have talked about the idea. How big of a difference would that make?
I think it would be a great event. I admire the fact that Missouri does that, and I think it's great. And in fact, I listened to the Missouri commercial about it. They encourage Kansans to come on over.
Yeah.
So I think that we're missing out. I think we should consider something like that.
Okay, that's the voice of Dr. John McKinney, Director of Student and Family Services for the Shawnee Mission School District. We are also joined by Samara Crawford Herrera. She's the Community Partnerships Advocacy and Engagement Manager for Kansas City Public Schools. Thanks for a good conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful.
Yeah. When we come back, we'll turn to the Missouri State Fair and a new push for farm-to-market food at the fair. Who would have thunk it? I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. On Monday's show, we learned about the new ordinance in Kansas City, Missouri that'll make it easier for victims of domestic violence to escape a bad living situation. Hear about that at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, we bring you primary election results with analysis from journalists, party leaders, and lawmakers in Missouri and Kansas. You're not going to want to miss it. Big vote today on both sides of the state line. Well, one of the most unmistakable pleasures of going to a state fair is the food. You have your staples like corn dogs, funnel cakes, and kettle corn. Then there's the novelty fried foods like pickles, Oreos, and Twinkies. I've never had a fried pickle. Don't plan on having one. I bet you'll find most of those at this year's Missouri State Fair in Sedalia. But what you'll also have is the Missouri Grown Bistro and Market, a full-service farm-to-table restaurant and market on the fairgrounds. The concept is a partnership between the Missouri Department of Agriculture and L'École Culinaire, that's Kansas City, to highlight the best of Missouri's agriculture. Joining me now to talk about all this are three members of the cooking school. Chef Brent Frisbee is the lead instructor. Chef, good to have you. Welcome.
Hey, good to be here.
Logan Gaspard is a Sedalia native in his third phase at the school, and we'll explain that later on. Logan, good to have you.
Thank you.
Kurt Foss is a veteran and a Warrensburg native, also in his third phase. Kurt, welcome to you.
Thank you.
You know, they were good enough to bring in samples of a few of the items that will be on the menu at the bistro. While we pass the first one out to try, Chef Brent, tell us about this concept. I mean, is this the first year for the Missouri-grown bistro?
I believe the Missouri-grown bistro has been a thing down there for a while, but this is the first year that us at Le Cole have been able to partner with them, and we really came up with a fun menu and a lot of fun stuff that I think you guys are going to enjoy.
A fun menu meaning what? What's ahead for us?
Well, what we got, your first dish for you we got today, we've got the crunchy French toast, which is two pieces of Texas toast dipped and breaded in cornflakes with maple syrup and powdered sugar. And when you get that plate down at the fair, it comes with the protein, you know, a sausage, bacon, or ham on the side too.
Yeah.
But we just got you some French toast today.
Well, how long a planning process was this to know what was going to be available in August and then, you know, build a menu around it?
Well, the way that the Missouri grown stuff is it's a lot of local purveyors, local grown stuff. So they have all of their stuff almost year round in some way, shape, or form. But we've been working on this menu and this partnership for the better part of the year at this point. Like I did an expo with them in, I think it was March, with the Tasty Expo, and we partnered with them, and I did a lot of cooking demos and stuff for them at the function in the Overland Park Convention Center.
Well, what are some of the ingredients supplied by Missouri food producers that you're taking advantage of?
Everything on this menu is locally grown or locally sourced in Missouri.
And give me a list. Give me some of what are some of those items? He's leafing through his papers here.
We've got our daily special sheets. Like each day we're going to showcase, because there's a small army of local purveyors and local vendors and stuff that we're using, and we're trying to showcase all of their stuff throughout the course of the fair. So every day we've got a daily special. And like, for instance, just the first day, the apricot horseradish grilled pork chop, green chili, cheddar grits, and fried Brussels sprouts. Mm. Pork chops come from the Missouri Meat Lab, the Mizzou Meat Lab. Dick's Wild Root Horseradish, Veggie Patch, we're getting our peppers, McCaskill Family Farms, we get the grits, Edgewood Creamery, they have a nice cheddar cheese, and Poffer's Produce, we get our Brussels sprouts. So every single thing on this menu, save for maybe limes or avocados or something that's not native to Missouri, everything on this list and everything on this menu is a vendor that you can find at the fair this year.
Now, we're going to be taste testing some of the food being served here, and I'm joined by KCR's Lisa Rodriguez and David Falk. And Lisa, I don't know about you, but I'm sitting here thinking that all this sounds a whole lot better than fried pickles to me.
Absolutely. And before you knock on fried pickles again, Steve,
let's
back off the fried pickles.
You want to champion fried pickles
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What is it about fried? I can't even imagine.
It's delicious. It's the tart and the acidity with the sweet batter on it. It's great, and it's crunchy and awesome.
Logan,
but that's not what
pickles?
We're here to talk about.
I am.
You want to make a case for?
Excuse me. I am definitely a fan of fried pickles.
Really?
I fully condone frying pickles.
I'm close-minded here. Okay, so we have this French toast here. Describe it for us, Logan. Tell us a little more about the French toast that David and Lisa are sampling as we talk.
Basically, we wanted to, we wanted to add some texture by breading it in the cornflake. Mm-hmm. Kind of give it a small twist. And along with powdered sugar and syrup, you can do no wrong.
David Falk, you're imbibing here. Does this meet your satisfaction here? Or?
I think the breading on it adds a really nice twist that you don't normally do at home, and so it's a nice.
And it holds up well. I mean, this has been sitting with syrup on it for a couple of minutes, and it's still crunchy.
Yep.
And I might choose this over a funnel cake. For sure.
Oh, really?
Definitely.
That's a big statement, Lisa. A very big statement.
Well, that's one of the problems you come in with French toast when you're plating French toast, or even at home when you've tried to make French toast. A lot of times the batter will overpower the bread, and your bread just gets soggy, and this keeps a nice, hearty crunch to it.
Oh, okay. Logan, will you be manning the kitchen in Sedalia in the weeks to come here?
I will. I have chosen two to 3 days to go down there, just with the way that my work schedule is going to pan out.
How many hours are you going to be putting in?
Seven hours each day.
7 hours each day. Yeah. How about you, Kurt?
I have picked 7 days to go down there.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of days.
It is.
And how many hours a day?
As many as they need me.
Why did you want to do this?
Because it's fun.
Yeah, what's fun about it?
Making people art, basically.
Yeah.
I mean...
And that's what
Kurt, being from Warrensburg too, he drives up to his class every day right here on the plaza, and it's just closer for him to drive down to Sedalia. You know, it's 30 minutes one way or an hour the other way.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Well, Chef Brent, what goes into developing a recipe like this? I mean, what's the process that you guys have used?
A lot of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and that's the fun part of all this, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the fun part of it. And that's what I try to tell my students too, is when we're in class, we have what we have our lecture time, which we talk about, you know, the science and what goes into making a dish, and then we have the lab. Well, to me, labs are for experimenting. You explain, you know, we've talked about the science of it. You take a quiz about the science of it. I'm here to field any questions for you. Try new things.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what we like to do just as chefs, is we've spent our life trying new things and different things and what we think might work and what won't work. And then we find out where we can tweak it and where we can change it and where we can, you know, add our own personal flair to it. And I think a lot of this is just from, like I said, the small army of purveyors that we have at our disposal, being partnered with the Department of Agriculture and Missouri Grown, has really given us a lot of room to run.
Now, this is hard, like when you're hosting a talk show and like you want to eat the food in front of you, but you got to keep asking these questions and stuff. And I really would like to turn this whole thing. I'm going to leave for a while and eat, and you guys run this thing. How many times will you end up reworking, or can you end up reworking an idea until you finally get it right?
As many times as it takes to get it right.
And how many can that be? 5, 10?
As many times as it takes to get it.
Yeah.
A lot of things, though, is once you understand the science of it, you can kind of map it out. And that's another thing I tell my students, is think about the plate you want to finish with before you start cutting anything. Think about where you want to go before you start cutting stuff up, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can't uncut a vegetable. So think about how you want it on the plate, or how you want it to pair with your steak, or how you want it to go in your dish.
Who does your taste testing when you're trying, coming up with new ideas?
Oh, that's half the fun of the job.
Yeah. Well, who does it?
We do.
You do it. Yeah. That works for you pretty well, Logan?
That definitely works for me. I've learned to go to school hungry.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's a smart thing to do,
right? Yeah, skip breakfast because we have a big lunch.
Yes.
Yeah. You do the same thing?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's a better way to do it. Okay, let's talk about this next sample that's here in front of us, and... what do we have here, this next thing?
This is the Ranchero Burrito. It's got hash browns, sausage, roasted green chilies, and cheddar cheese in it.
Cheddar cheese, okay. Lisa, David, have you had a chance? Because I'm still working on the French toast. I'm sort of stuck on the French toast, which I really like a lot. Yeah.
Steve, this is great. I mean, looking at this, I wish the listeners could see how packed full this burrito is. There is no room for air, and the flavor, it's just as packed with flavor as it is the ingredients.
That's really good. I love the fennel in that sausage. Uh-huh. Is great, and then it has a little bit of heat to it, but not too much, so much that you can taste the flavors of the chilies in there and get a little bit of heat without it being too spicy. It is really delicious.
Chef, is that what you were aiming for?
Yeah.
Kurt, as a student, what can you learn from a project like this, you know, making all these different foods?
Well, you learn, you get to see all the chef instructors in their element, to where they're not your instructor at that point. You are side by side with them.
Ah.
And you get to learn a lot of their tendencies and how they do it and all that stuff. And
yeah.
And then you get the people coming in to eat the food, and you hear the stuff that they're saying, and... Because if you cook your own food, of course, it's going to be good. But you like to hear that from other people saying, hey, your food was good, this was good, I would have done this differently, something like that.
Can you overhear people at the fair giving you that kind of feedback? Have you had a chance, or is it still too new for you to have had that experience? Yeah. Logan, what about you?
I definitely appreciate any feedback that I can get. And with the customer base that the fair will bring us, there's definitely a wide net. Yes. Of different feedback.
Yeah. How open are people who come to the fair to wanting to try out what you guys are doing? Because, again, you think of a fair, you think about fried pickles before you think about farm to market.
Well, we could put that French toast breading on a pickle for you if that'd make you feel better.
Yeah, it would. It might sell better at the fair, too, right? Yeah.
But, no, with it being our first year, I couldn't tell you 100%. But hopefully, from what I understand from all the social media feedback we've got from it, I think people are really excited to try some new stuff.
Yeah. So people, they're coming, they're willing to give it a whirl, you think, Chef? They want to give it a try.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite recipe, Logan, that you'll be on the that will be on the menu at the bistro that you want to try out?
I'm actually a breakfast fan. I could eat breakfast three meals a day, four meals a day. The Big B&G, biscuits and gravy. It's pretty cut and dry, but rib sticky and definitely something to get you up in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, who doesn't like a nice big plate of biscuits and gravy?
Exactly.
Yeah. Kurt, how about you? What's your favorite item on the menu?
I am looking forward to the Waffle Crystal, which is going to be our take on just a ham turkey and Swiss sandwich, which is going to be cooked inside of a waffle iron.
Well, it's a new twist on like a Monte Cristo, which is like a battered ham sandwich, and then it's like you pan fry it like on a flat top or something. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a pancake battered sandwich. Well, what we did is we took it at took it a little one step further, and we made it on a waffle, mm-hmm. and then pressed it like you would a panini in a waffle iron.
Yeah.
So I think that would be really fun. Yeah.
Let me get our listeners involved here. We're wondering how open you are to trying farm-to-market fare at the Missouri State Fair instead of the old fried pickle. And if you want to call in to defend the fried pickle, I'm all ears. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. We have another dish here in front of us that will be served at the Missouri Grown Bistro. Logan, what am I looking at here?
Next, we have the steak and watermelon salad.
Mm.
It is a sirloin that we've sliced up.
Yes, it is.
Along with a watermelon that was actually grilled, which really brings out a lot of the flavor, the sweetness. House-made pico de gallo.
Yeah.
And a cilantro lime dressing.
Okay. Well, we have our testers here, Lisa and David. What do you think?
It's delicious. Now, I started in on this salad before I knew what was in it, and so I thought I was going to get a big piece of tomato with my steak, and it
exactly.
was such a pleasant surprise when it was watermelon. It is really good, and you can taste a little bit of the grill on there, a little char, and it's really fresh and tasty.
Boy, it is really fresh and tasty. Yeah, David?
You know, I think this is a kind of thing, you know, you think of fair food, and you walk around holding something on the run, but you know, people can walk all over that place, and I think they look for a time to sit down, and this is a great item that they can sit down and enjoy a salad. It's reminding me of days when I was a kid showing 4-H stuff, and that stuff was all grown, and you guys are having all that same kind of stuff there. I think it's a great kind of full circle thing for people.
Our building that we're in is going to be the only one on there that has air conditioning as well.
Yeah.
Which is a definite plus.
Yes.
So especially plus, when you got people, you want people to come and sit down and try stuff. Yeah. And that salad, actually, that was something that we did with Missouri Grown before.
Mm-hmm.
We did a gluten-free grilling aspect, and that's a good gluten-free dish with real fresh, real vibrant, lot of flavor going on, and it's very healthy and very good for you.
Oh, that's great. Let's go to some calls here. 816-235-2888. Here's Nick from Shawnee, who I think happens to be my son. Nick, good morning.
Hello, Father. I am, in fact, your son, and I'm wondering, are you going to be bringing home some of this food you're eating, or are you just going to be eating it all on the air?
Well, what's the answer, Lisa?
What should I do? Well, I couldn't hear the question. I don't have headphones on.
He wants to know if I'm going to be bringing home this food today or just eating it on the air.
Well, if you can leave any of it, then maybe.
You're going to have to take him to the fair, Steve.
Right.
Yeah, the fair is the 9th of the 19th, and we're in the Youth Center building, and you can come get as many plates as you want.
I think that's what we're looking at, Nick.
Perfect. Well, I'm glad to hear you're thinking about me on air today, and I'll be skipping my lunch here in anticipation for this delicious food. So,
well, Nick is driving deliveries for Amazon right now, and you're going to make eat the turkey sandwich that we made at home last night, and I'm here to tell you it ain't nearly as going to be as good as anything in front of us here today.
Don't knock a good turkey sandwich.
Sorry about that. I'm glad you called, Nick.
It was worth a try. Thanks, Dad.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. Chef Brent, how do you know you'll have enough food each day? I mean, do some ingredients have limited availabilities here as you approach this big fair experience?
Well, we've had people down all week. We've been receiving orders locally here at the school and carting stuff down, along with getting other orders from purveyors down there. So fingers crossed that we have enough stuff. But I know our daily specials menu is one of those things where, since we're open every day, we can reuse, you know, the stuff day to day. So we can prep a lot of it ahead of time, and we know that we're going to use it in a timely fashion. But like our daily specials, I think since we're just doing them each day and they're so different each day, that it'll just be like a until we sell out of it sort of deal. So,
you know, Logan, what's the particular challenge of having to prepare meals for thousands of guests during the course of a day potentially? I mean, we're talking about a state fair as opposed to a restaurant where people are coming at you right and left. How does that change your world?
Well, basically, it's a situation where you'd definitely prefer to over prepare. So you take your baseline number and maybe add a little bit to it just to ensure that you don't run out, because it is nice to run out of food, but it's also nice for everyone who would want some.
What's the baseline number going to be for breakfast at the fair or lunch at the fair again, where potentially the number of customers totals the thousands?
What
we did is we averaged the numbers that they did in the past on each day, because you know each day is more busy than, so you know the weekends are obviously busier than you know Mondays and Tuesdays, so we took the numbers from before and kind of used that as a guidepost, and that's what we kind of worked towards.
So what time do your people start working on a typical day at the fair to get all this food ready for the day?
Oh, we've got guys going down as early as 5 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
And then we're doing a pop-up breakfast where it's just kind of like a grab-and-go stuff. Like, we'll have like a chafer of like biscuits and gravy if you want something hot, or like fruit and scones and just, you know, little breakfast stuff like that. And then from 7 to 10, we're actually serving the breakfast menu.
Mm-hmm.
And then 11 to 2 is when we switch over to the lunch menu. So we only got a limited time that we're actually open each day. But and I think that's going to help kind of guide some choices were to some of the other menu items.
But have your students ever served this many meals at a time?
No.
Before they've hit the state?
I mean, not with us.
Yeah, not with you. Okay. Back to some phone calls here at 816-235-2888. Margarita from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is, if in the fair there will be something that is targeted for the people whose main goal is to eat healthy, not sugar, not so fried, organic, for the health of their heart, cholesterol, diabetes, it's of main concern, and still tasty.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call, Margarita. Chef Brent, talk to us about a healthy fare that'll be on your menu down there.
Well, again, like we said with the watermelon, the steak and watermelon salad is you know, it's gluten-free. Uh-huh. Everything is locally grown, locally sourced here in Missouri, so you don't have to worry about any additives or any preservatives or anything. Everything's locally done here. And all of our sandwiches that we offer, like even like the BLTs or a smoked chicken club, you can get any of these sandwiches in a wrap instead of on bread or on toast. So you can just get them wrapped in a tortilla.
Beautiful. But there's one question. What about the people who are vegetarian?
How about people who are vegetarian, Chef?
Yes, I am actually vegan. So
we're making all of this stuff to order. So if you'd prefer not to just have the watermelon and corn salad, you know, we could do it without the steak, or we can do the chicken derby cob without chicken on it, and then that menu item is just remain tomatoes, avocado, you know, egg, honey Dijon dressing. Like, we can tailor make these items for you.
They're very flexible, Margarita. I hope you're catching that.
And they are organic. Oh, well, yeah. Then I'll
be there. Everything's locally grown, organic, locally grown and sourced. Everything comes from Missouri.
God. Isn't that something?
Okay, perfect. Yes, now my mouth is watering.
Thanks, Margarita. I'm glad you called.
Thank you so much. Okay, bye.
I should point out again that the Missouri-grown bistro and market will be in the Taylor Woods Youth Building at the Missouri State Fair. It opens Thursday. It runs through August 19th from 9 in the morning to 9 at night. We're talking breakfast and lunch, eat-in or takeout. In the meantime, we have our fourth dish that's here in front of me. What are we looking at here, Kurt?
We are looking at barbecue pulled pork tacos that has apple cabbage slaw, cheddar jack cheese, and a barbecue sauce.
And this is killer. I've already been.
It's really good.
You can tell I'm eating it right now and talking with my mouth full. David, what do you think?
I bit into this and I just stopped. The flavor it's just a wow.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's a flavor sensation. Lisa, what do you think?
I mean, that's what I was going to say. I'm not sure exactly what all of the tastes are that you're trying to get in like a perfect dish, but here you've got the sweet, you've got acidity, you have, what is it, like umami? Is that, you know, when you're biting into meat there? So it really, I mean, it's like your whole mouth. You're tasting it with your whole mouth. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, that sauce, I mean, that is a killer sauce. Yeah. I had the pleasure of actually meeting Daniel, which is Daniel's barbecue sauce. He's located right here in Greenwood, like right just outside of the city. And he's a super nice guy. And all of it, he's got a whole array of sauces that are amazing.
And this thing is called what again? Because people need to hear what this is.
This is a barbecue pulled pork taco.
Okay. And when will we be serving it every day?
Serving it every day.
Yeah.
All the stuff that I brought you today, we're serving every day.
You go really well with fried pickles.
I believe that.
Yeah. What wouldn't, though?
Logan, nice fried pickles and a nice fried, nice cold beer.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are both in your third phase at the school. What does that mean, and how much longer do you have until you're finished here?
Well, I, as you said, I'm in the third phase out of four phases. So I technically have 20 weeks left. So okay. I will be receiving my diploma mid-January.
Is the third phase the last phase?
The fourth phase would be the last
phase. The fourth phase is the last phase. And what are you focused on in the third phase?
This phase, I have classes such as American Regional Cuisine, International Cuisine, Garde Manger, which is cold food preparation, as well as curing meats, making condiments.
Making pickles.
Stop. Hey, Kurt, what happens in your fourth phase?
Well, I'm actually in fourth phase now. Uh-huh. My third phase, we did the restaurant class and baking class.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So every phase.
So like third and fourth phase are kind of interchangeable, whereas you want the beginnings, you know, your first starts with, you know, your nutrition and your culinary skills one and two, which is where you focus on knife cuts and how to saute and how to grill, stuff like that. Whereas three and four are kind of interchangeable.
Right.
Whereas in fourth phase, we typically do our baking class, which is a more advanced class when there's a lot to it.
Right.
And our restaurant class, where we actually have a restaurant and we open the dining room up for the students to actually work in a restaurant environment, both the front of the house and the back of the house.
Okay, the Missouri-grown bistro and market. It opens up Thursday. It runs through August 19th at the Missouri State Fair. Based on what Lisa and David are saying and my own experience, I couldn't recommend it enough. Do your students get extra credit for coming in today and helping out?
That's a good question, Chef.
Yeah.
You want to get that clarified here, right?
Sure.
That's Chef Brent Frisbee. He's the lead instructor at L'Ecole Culinaire. Logan Gaspard and Kurt Foss, both students at the school. David and Lisa, thank you so much for coming in. Sure appreciate it.
We really appreciate it.
Good luck in the run ahead here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today is primary day in Kansas and Missouri. If you haven't voted already, you have until 7 o'clock tonight in both states. Then tune in tomorrow at 11. We'll have a full hour of results and analysis. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Emily Park. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.